The Retirement Conversation is a series of episodes on the changing nature of retirement today. These conversations are focused on the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition, including career, work, purpose, wellness, social relationships, and leisure pursuits. You'll hear from leading experts in the field. You'll hear the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll find out about practical ideas and tips to create your own. Retirement Wisdom was co-founded by Joe Casey and Dennis Wussman, two former business executives turned professional coaches. At Retirement Wisdom, our mission is to save people from a boring retirement. We hope you enjoy the series and conversations.
Today's guest on the Retirement Conversation is Nell Painter. Nell is the Edwards Professor of American History Emerita at Princeton University. Her acclaimed works of history include Standing at Armageddon, Sojourner Truth, and the New York Times bestseller, The History of White People. She holds an MFA from the Rhode Island School of Design and a BFA from Mason Gross School of the Arts.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I was wondering, is there anything else that you'd like to add? Anything else that people need to know about you that's not in your bio?
Gosh, there's a lot that people might want to know, but it depends on who the person is who wants to know. So I think the best thing is to just leave the bio as it is, and if people have other questions, they can say, look on my website. How's that? Or read the book.
Having read the book, I'd highly recommend the book. It really spoke to me, having just completed a master's degree at age 60. So nothing like what you did, but I can really relate to a lot of the stories and experiences that you relate in the book. And I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself through the process of going back to school and pursuing art school in particular?
I think the big thing I learned is that it's deadly to your frame of mind, to your mood, to my mood, to see myself through other people's eyes, that I really needed to look out on the world from inside, from myself, as myself. That was the really big story. But then there were a lot of smaller things. Well, for one thing, as I wrote, I realized that I had made a really bad decision to go to a graduate school right out of undergraduate school. So I didn't know that I was able to write a chapter called Bad Decision, but I was.
And I noticed that you started the process before you retired from Princeton by taking two introductory painting classes. How did that early start help you?
It helped a lot in the sense of moving my side of my brain from the left side to the right side and to starting to learn the vocabulary, both the words, but also the visual vocabulary of painting. So it really was a beginning, and I suppose the final thing I learned was that I really enjoyed the process, and I love standing up and painting for 3 hours at a time. Later, I discovered at the Drawing and Painting Marathon at the Studio School in New York that I loved drawing and painting for 8 hours.
You call that, I think, in one of the articles that I read, you call that going from text to image. It took a while for you to do that. Is it still a continuous journey for you, or do you think you've achieved a lot in getting to this next point, but do you feel it's something that you continually learn new things with as you're going through it?
Yes, continually learn new things, but also I had moved pretty much away from text a few years ago. But then the politics of 2016 and 2017 and continuing have moved me back to text because the politics are so pressing. And with text, there's more control over the message than there is with image. With image, it's purely that the viewer, or mostly that the viewer makes the meaning. In text, I can at least guide the viewers more. So actually, I'm probably more text-based now than I was.
So this wasn't your first educational rodeo, so to speak, as a distinguished historian. Going back first for a BA at Mason Gross at Rutgers, how did you need to shift your mindset from being really in front of the room, so to speak, from the role of a professor to now being an undergraduate student?
Oh, yes. I think I started learning that many years earlier in German class in Berlin, of simply it going with the flow of making mistakes and not feeling bad about them and just keeping going. So being a student was not something brand new to me when I started at Mason Gross. My husband and I, we had both studied German as undergraduates in the 60s, but we had very different responses to going back to class. He was maybe mortified is too strong a word, but he didn't like making mistakes. I didn't mind.
A lesson in there for people who retire or move on to their second act and transition, etc. But the mindset that you had about not being afraid of making mistakes must have given you some, I guess it's a relief of some respects, because as you're going into something new, you're getting all these new experiences and everything. So do you think that really helped a lot? Do you view that as a very positive thing, I guess?
Absolutely.
For people?
Absolutely. And if you're starting over, you can't know everything in advance.
And as someone who has a lot of experience personally making mistakes, I found your book to be a very inspirational story of perseverance and will. Yeah. But one thing that I was really struck by was the naysayers and difficult people that you had to deal with, especially some of your teachers at various stages of your journey. And you seemed to have support there, but it seemed to come from outside the schools. How did you deal with the naysayers and what kept you going?
Oh, that's a big question with many answers. Partly, I dealt with the naysayers when I recognized what was going on, and I could say, Henry, that's bullshit. Partly, also, I was just confused. You know, what's the right thing to do? What should I be doing? Did I make a mistake? Am I good enough? Just questions. And then there is also just being totally pathetic. And I admit that. I was totally pathetic. But I got over it because I have a circle of friends and colleagues who spent time with my work and who looked at my work as my work. And that made all the difference in the world.
And there were also a number of significant events in your life that took place while you were pursuing your MFA. For example, you had challenges certainly with your parents' health, you had the publication of a major book, you had the opening of your archive at Duke and receiving a Centennial Medal at Harvard, and that's just a brief list, which I actually came up and ended up conflicting with the key meeting in that process. What did you learn in navigating each of those challenges that came up along the way?
Well, first of all, it's one day at a time. Especially with older parents, you never know. I mean, you know that it's going to be a challenge, but you never know what the challenge is going to be. I thought when I started Mason Gross that I had everything all arranged, and I could just sort of set my former life aside and go on into something new. No, that was not the case. So rather than moving one set of issues from my shoulder to going on to a new set, I just added to them. And I think that's true for everybody who's a grown-up. You don't even have to be as old as we are to have acquired a life and acquired the accoutrements of that life. And especially if you're a woman, especially if you're a daughter, you're likely to be responsible for other people in a way that you just can't let them down.
You wrote that aging is a big deal. It changes your life, and that's certainly something we can all relate to since we're all aging. What are some of the surprising ways that you find today it's changing your life, and what upsides to aging have you observed?
The upside, I think, and this is still a work in progress, is forgiving myself for the stupid things I have done. That's hard. That's really hard. And I've discovered that the stupid things I have done tend to crowd in on me when I'm harried or tired or scared. So they don't just hang around all the time. They come at moments of stress. So being able to recognize that process has helped a lot. I remember when I turned 40 a million years ago thinking, okay, this is me, and I'm not going to get any better. I really have to accept myself as I am. And that's something that needs to happen. Maybe not every day, maybe not even every month, but it has to happen on, from time to time. Self-acceptance.
Do you think the journey you took with the artwork, with the progression there, do you think that helped raise the awareness of the, you mentioned forgiving yourself and understanding when you feel a certain way and accepting yourself. Did the artwork have a large play in that for you?
I think the process of art education played process. As far as the artwork itself, I included it in the book as kind of works in progress, so the reader can go along with me and see what's happening in my work. One thing that has surprised me sometimes is, as I, say, reorganize my flat files or move my old art around, is discovering that works that I had dismissed as stupid or slight or useless, I really like them when I come back to them. So I guess the answer there is there's not a final judgment at any one point.
One thing that I notice is that when people take on a new journey like you did, and start over with something new, there is a series of things that we need to pick up and learn, but there's also a number of things we need to let go of. Were there any things for you that you found that you needed to let go of to move forward?
I think my sense of the importance of coherence, that is to say, of things being coherent and making sense. Part of what I encountered in art school and in among the artists I moved with in Newark and New Jersey is a kind of do-it-yourself aesthetic in which things just don't make sense. And I always like things to make sense. I'm much better about letting things not make sense now or make a different kind of sense, have visual meaning as opposed to discursive meaning, as opposed to political or cultural meaning in the way that we would use words. So letting go of meaning, of discursive meaning, was a big challenge. And I don't think I'm over it yet. That's something that needs to be redone every time I start a new project.
I'm a very kind of nuts and bolts kind of person, right? So I'd like to have things make sense to me all the time. Well, I'm getting an appreciation that some of this is if you let go of some of these things, they can make sense to you in different ways. That's okay.
Yes, and that was a process for me of letting go of control. I guess that's it. Of not knowing where I'm going to end up when I start. Now, I have never been a person who started either my career as a historian or my career as an artist with a big plan. No. But starting in one point and then just going to the next 5 minutes or the next day or the next work or the next application of paint or ink, that's something I can do now, not knowing at all where this is going to go. And that means that sometimes in work that I have not finished or I have rejected, I can cut it up, I can remake it manually with paint or ink, or I can remake it digitally with Photoshop. So there are things that don't work out in the beginning that can be remade.
I find that creative process that you've gone through quite fascinating. And I think about people who retire, and that's why I'm kind of going back to it again. I think about people that retire that are so used to having doing things a certain way, or they're set, and then they never really, this is a great opportunity for them as they transition to this next part of their life to let things go in some regards as they move forward and be open to these experiences. I think is just phenomenal. And you're living proof of that. That's, I appreciate that very much.
Good, good. I think we need to be open to having help in that letting go. I don't think you can let go all by yourself because it's too scary not to have a sense of how this makes sense, or to have a sense of, say, the skill or the craft involved in the new thing.
Oh, getting help, absolutely. Appreciate that.
A number of people that we work with are thinking about what are they going to do next after their primary career is over, whether they decide the timing or someone else does. And often people are interested in, how do I continue learning? How do I be a lifelong learner? What advice would you share with someone who's listening, who's inspired by your story as well, and is thinking about returning to school later in life?
Well, do that. Take a class. Take a class. We're blessed in New Jersey with excellent community colleges, and you can take a class in anything, really. You don't have to start by signing up for a degree program. So, for instance, my sister-in-law in California is studying metalworking in her retirement.
Hmm. Nuts and bolts.
Yeah, literally.
So starting something, doing something, just taking that next small step. And it can be a local thing. It could be whatever you want it to be. Yeah, but take the next step.
And it can be a very small step in terms of one class. One class that lasts a semester, or one class that lasts a day.
Absolutely. From a standpoint of taking an action, what do you think is a healthy way to people be thinking about this? What do you recommend would be a healthy way to think about this for themselves, if you had to give a mindset kind of suggestion for people?
Well, I think if you move the feet, the mind will follow. So let's take my sister-in-law, who wondered about, I think she got into this metalworking because she likes to make jewelry. And so she went and is taking this class and discovered, oh, there are all these other things you can do. But she didn't start by saying, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make an airplane or something like that. I guess not judging yourself. I mean, by the time you get to retirement, you've already done something. You don't have to do anything else. Just do what you want.
Extremely well said.
Thanks, Dr. Painter. One last question, if you don't mind. In one of the quotes, I guess, from an article, you said, I wasn't feeling appreciated for my strengths, intellectual sophistication, and visual ambition. To the contrary, my strengths felt like impediments. And you went on to talk about how that related to some of the work you were doing in learning and experience of art education. And what types of recommendations would you have people who probably feel the same way as they're making a transition? Their strengths aren't being appreciated. And how do you, kind of things people could do to get over some of the impediments they may face?
That's a big question. And I think my answer would be to make it smaller, make it not a once and for all, but kind of a day by day or a week by week. And that means, at least it meant for me, a kind of loosening of my grip, a kind of letting go, and a trying not to judge those who I felt were judging me, but also not to judge myself. And so I would say there's no one big answer, and it's a local answer. It's a daily answer or a weekly or a monthly answer as you jigger back and forth between what you think your strengths are and maybe what new strengths you need or how to hold on to the old ones. I mean, I think that one of the greatest strengths of old people like me is that we are reliable. We come on time. We do our work. We stay through. Those are great strengths. And if somebody doesn't appreciate them, well, that person is wrong.
That's great advice. Be proud of your strengths, leverage them, and smaller steps. Great stuff.
Yeah, but also be able to let go. So, for instance, I used to be a very punctual person. I was always on time. I am no longer always on time. It drives my husband crazy. He says, you're going to be late. You're going to be late. And I say, so what?
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I would encourage everyone to read this book, Old in Art School, A Memoir of Starting Over. It is just rich in wisdom and a real true journey. And how can people learn more about you and your work?
People can learn more about me and my work on my website, www.nellpainter.com. It has three parts. One part is Nell Irvin Painter, the historian. One part is Nell Painter, the artist. And the middle part is the new book. It has interviews and reviews and video and audio. interviews.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Painter.
You're very welcome. I've enjoyed talking to you.
So that was a really good conversation with Dr. Nell Painter. Joe, what were the key takeaways for you from this today?
Well, the first thing is that our listeners are glad that it's back with you joining us on this conversation, and it's no longer just me solo, so they're the only people happier than me.
You're kind. I'm not sure about that, right. But you're kind. Okay.
But here are the things that jumped out to me. First, her comments about self-acceptance and forgiveness really resonated, and I think that that's an important thing to move forward. She also talked about these things don't really require always a grand plan. Focus on the small steps, and in particular, the next action. Break it down day by day. And then all of her eloquent comments about letting go. And it's a hard thing, so be open to help. Don't try to do that always by yourself. Thought that was very insightful. And then finally, be comfortable with mistakes. Another form of acceptance and growth and learning coming from that. How about you?
I appreciated the... And it's in the book, it's an excellent book, about the struggles she faced in making this transition. I think there were some really powerful lessons in there from somebody, you know, and we used the image early on, going from text to image. And we mentioned that a couple of times in the conversation today. You know, how do people at the end, two things that popped out at me really kind of stuck with me, in addition to the stuff you said, of course, Joe, which is good, is that what people should do to kind of help get them started. And we talked about action and we talked about mindset and the combination of those two things. And she says, well, move your feet and the mind will follow. Hey, great advice. So I don't think I need to say more about that. The second one was letting go of control, not being so much in control. And when you really heard what she was saying there, it was really helping her creative process and helped it actually, it continues the journey of her improvement with that. You know, she would look at something old and she may cut it up, she may remake it, she may do it, all of it in getting to the next product and the next part of her destination. So, you know, letting go of control and not being able to be comfortable with that and comfortable with mistakes, as you said, I think were the key things that I took away from today.
And I've honestly never, ever in my life considered getting a tattoo, but I might think about if you move the feet, the mind will follow. That would be my number one candidate.
If you get a tattoo, I can guarantee you that my feet will not follow.
Yeah.
So, good one.
That's for sure. And one of the last things though I'd like to add is her comments about the virtues of many of us older folk, meaning reliability, perseverance, and really working all the way through. I think harken back to our last podcast guest, Paul Rupert, talking about companies embracing older workers going forward. And I thought it really highlighted and underscored some of the points that he made. Welcome to this week's Noteworthy segment. This is where we highlight an article we think is worth your time that we found interesting. And this week we're featuring an article titled How to Be a Lifelong Learner. It's written by Kira Newman in Greater Good magazine. You'll find the link to it in the show notes. And it's written by the instructor of the world's most popular massive open online course. And Dennison, reading this article, what jumped out at you? What did you find interesting about it?
It starts with a quote in the article that she has attributed to an instructor. It says, people can often do more, change more, and learn more, often far more than they've ever dreamed possible. Our potential is hidden in plain sight all around us. So as a person in my own experiences in my career, I found continued learning so critically important because it showed that a person was not only interested in continuing to expand their skills, but I always even had mentored younger people and to continue to add things to your personal portfolio and learn. And as you learn more and as you experience more and as you got exposure to more things, it actually does help your career. I also believe it adds the skills and it adds to your strengths as you actually retire. So not only that, the article mentioned learning can even extend your life. Okay, that's good for me. That's powerful. The three things that the tips that she gives on how to make learning more efficient and enjoyable were pretty important. Focus and don't focus. There's a whole thing about mind wandering after a period of focusing that sometimes people don't think about. That can make things much more enjoyable. Definitely do that. Practice efficiently. And I think the best advice here, if it's too big or if you feel like it's not working for you, then break it down into even smaller chunks. And we've heard that over and over again from people. Break it into small pieces. People try and do things too much. And then finally, exercise. Our physical exercise actually promotes the learning and the ability to learn and absorb in the brain cells. So those are the key things that popped out at me. Joe, what about yourself?
I'd highlight a few. First of all, that we're never too old to learn, and we're never too old to start. And I'd echo what Dr. Painter recommended. Her advice, I thought, was very valuable. Start small. Take some type of course. It doesn't have to be a formal academic program with a long-term goal or degree in mind necessarily. It could just be something you're interested in, passionate about, or curious about. And there are so many options today. There's never been a better time for this. Again, these online courses are incredibly accessible and easier to fit into to schedules and options. So lots of things to do to that, and a great time of year to look at what may be coming up and available that catches your interest. And then the benefits. There's probably no bigger investment you can make than in yourself and your own learning. And she highlighted the cognitive benefits, the physical health benefits, and I think also the benefits of mental activity, stimulation, and learning speak for themselves.
Today's conversation focused on second acts. And one thing we do as coaches at Retirement Wisdom is to help people think through second acts. We offer a free, no-obligation consultation that you can easily schedule with either Joe or I at retirementwisdom.com. Simply in the top left-hand corner, click on Get a Free Consultation and schedule time with us. We welcome the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you. We hope you have enjoyed the episode of today's Retirement Conversation with Dr. Nell Painter. You can get future episodes by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com. Thanks for listening. Till next time.